Disculpe, estoy buscando desde el librero.
¡Sigue! ¡Sigue! ¡Capitán Nemo! El mundo no precisa de nuevos continentes, sino de hombres nuevos.
Beneficio reprochado. Ofensa hecha.
Uno para todos y todos para uno.
La bravura siempre es respetada, incluso en un enemigo.
¡Sigue! ¡Ale, ale!
Gracias, D'Artagnan.
Nada era del individuo, a no ser unos cuantos centímetros cúbicos dentro de su cráneo. El gran hermano es la concreción de que el partido se presenta al mundo. Su función es actuar como punta de mira para todo. ¡Sigue ahora que puedes!
Divide tu día en partes y a cada una asígnale una tarea. Sin dejar un cuarto de hora, 10 minutos, ni 5 siquiera sin algo que hacer. Cuando sea así, observarás que no necesitas compañía, conversación ni simpatía de nadie. Y lograrás vivir con la independencia que todo ser humano debe aspirar. Gracias, señorita Jane Eyre.
Sigue leyendo, sigue escuchando. Esto es Desde el Librero, un podcast de Librerías Gandhi. Bienvenidos, queridos lectores.
Hola, queridos lectores, ¿cómo están? Yo soy Yara Vidal. Me da un gusto desmedido recibirlos, darles la bienvenida y recibirlos a este programa, porque esta entrevista la buscamos años. Pero luego pasa que pasa la información de un correo a otro, de un correo a otro, de un correo a otro, y de repente no llega el autor, porque el autor siempre nos quiere dar la entrevista. De todas formas, agradecemos los tantos años que estuvimos buscando esta entrevista con Drew Daywalt. Hoy es un día muy especial porque es como recibir un regalo que deseábamos desde hace mucho tiempo. Y saber que además la plática con Drew, el regalo tan grande de platicar con un autor infantil tan querido y que con su serie de crayolas ha dado la vuelta al mundo, logramos el match perfecto. Le pedimos a Rodrigo Morlesín, también autor infantil, que platicara con él. Y bueno, hicimos un bromance y muy grande. Son como gemelos, es como físicamente y emocionalmente y su corazón. Y bueno, pues no voy a hacer más larga esta introducción para que lo disfruten. Y también vamos a escuchar Horrores de Redactores que nos trae Mariana Aguilar y un sketch que no podía faltar, la meta entrevista de los crayones de Drew Daywalt, de esta serie de superventas, El día que los crayones renunciaron, que está en Fondo de Cultura Económica. Y bueno, hay muchísimas series derivadas de ese título, porque además, detrás de esas historias, ya verán cómo llegó Drew a escribir esa serie tan linda para niños y para adultos. Les doy la bienvenida, espero que la pasen muy bien. Comenzamos.
Desde el Librero presenta Horrores de Redactores.
Queridos lectores, hoy no les traemos un horror, sino un horrorcito. Y es que vamos a platicar de los diminutivos. Estas palabras, sobre todo sustantivos y adjetivos, a las que les agregamos una partícula para expresar menor tamaño. Por ejemplo, adopté un gatito, pero también para atenuar o disminuir lo que decimos. Como cuando anunciamos, ¡ay, hubo un errorcito! En México somos expertos en utilizar los diminutivos. Especialistas como Concepción Compani o José Ignacio Dávila Garibi han expresado que en nuestro país abusamos de los diminutivos, por diversas razones. Una consiste en ser gentiles y demostrar cariño. Por ejemplo, cuando le preguntamos a alguien si no gusta un taquito o un cafecito. Hay quienes ven este rasgo del habla mexicana como una herencia del náhuatl, pues en esta lengua el diminutivo expresa respeto y afecto. Existen diferentes sufijos para crear diminutivos, como el illo, por ejemplo, duendecillo, in, como en ternurín, o suelo, pecesuelo, p, Pero en México y en América Latina casi siempre empleamos el ito e ita. Perrito, casita, bromita, chambita, hasta el consabido ahorita. Vamos a repasar algunas claves para la correcta escritura de este sufijo, pues todos en algún momento dudamos, por ejemplo, si bebecito va con S o con C. Pero no se preocupen, no nos volverá a pasar con estas recomendaciones. O por lo menos, si se les olvida, saben que pueden consultarlo en Desde el Librero. Atención, van las claves. El diminutivo será ito o ita cuando las palabras terminen en o o a sin acento. Carrito, lamparita, mesita, y cuando terminen en consonante, a excepción de la N y la R. Azulito, arbolito, papelito. El diminutivo será cito o cita cuando las palabras terminen en una vocal acentuada, como mamá y café, que serán mamacita y cafecito. En E, I, U no acentuadas, piecito, bebecito, ponicito, y también las palabras que terminan en N o R, bomboncito, temblorcito. Ahora, ¿cómo sabremos si la terminación cito va con C o con S? Muy fácil. Si la palabra tiene S en su raíz, en realidad no agregamos cito, sino solamente ito. Esto ocurre con las palabras pasito, pasita, huesito, besito. Todas las palabras en las que sí agregamos cito van con C. Espero que estas reglitas chiquititas les ayuden mucho y también que sigamos reflexionando sobre las particularidades de nuestra habla, que siempre nos dan información acerca de nuestra cultura y nuestra forma de ver el mundo. ¡Abracito!
Y ahora, la entrevista con
Drew Daywalt. Si deseas ver la entrevista con subtítulos en español, la puedes encontrar en el canal de YouTube Revista Lee Más de Librerías Gandhi.
Hola a todas, hola a todos. No me lo van a creer. Hoy es un día increíble. Es como recibir un regalo. ¿A qué me refiero? A que hoy vamos a entrevistar a un autor extraordinario del cual lo hemos buscado durante meses y meses y años y siglos y décadas para poder platicar con él. Y hoy es el día. Después de problemas con su agenda, con mi agenda, no podíamos encontrarnos. Hoy lo logramos, así que estamos muy emocionados. El día de hoy es como recibir una caja nueva de crayones, así de increíble. Vamos a platicar con Drew Daywalt. ¿Y quién es Drew? Ah, pues Drew es ni más ni menos que el autor de El día que los crayones renunciaron, obviamente también de la segunda parte, El día que los crayones regresaron a casa, y también es autor, por supuesto, de La Navidad de los Crayones, pero no son los únicos libros que tiene. Tiene, por ejemplo, uno que solo se ha publicado en inglés, que es The Crayons Trick or Treat, que es buenísimo para Día de Muertos. Tiene uno de Star Wars, que no lo tengo, pero pronto lo voy a tener. Tiene The Legend of Rock, Paper, Scissors, también. Así que hay muchísimo que platicar con él, que nos platique cómo se convirtió en un autor de libros para niños, porque antes de ser autor de libros para niños, era guionista en Hollywood. ¿Cómo hizo ese cambio? ¿Qué pasó? Bueno, pues para eso vamos a platicar con él.
You had the perfect childhood between this children's literature, but also the forbidden stuff that, yeah, that made you stronger and curious. That's amazing. And the house and everything. You need to, well, I hate when people says to me, you need to write about, but I, as a fan, I said to you, you need to write about that how.
I think I'm going to. I'm 53 now, and I'm finally going, I think I might have a story to tell.
I'm a little bit sure, but
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to change my questions because this is very interesting that you told me.
Sure.
Which is your favorite monster of the classic Universal monsters?
You know, I have two children now. They're 20 and 14. But when they were little, like 7 to 10, I was able to show them the early monster movies because they weren't too scary. And my kids, they like the stuff that I like. So I was able to show them Dracula and Frankenstein and Creature from the Black Lagoon. And my son at the time was like 7 or 8. And he made the most amazing observation. And that revealed to me my favorite monster. He said, Dad, he said, these monster movies, they're sad in a way. And I'm like, how are they sad? And his name's Reese. I said, how are they sad, Reese? And he goes, well, all these monsters, you know, the classic black and whites. He goes, they just want a girlfriend. And I went, oh, my God, you're right. So the creature from the Black Lagoon just falls in love with the woman on the boat. The scientist, the marine biologist, my daughter's now going to be a marine biologist because of that movie, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Frankenstein just wanted a bride, but she found him hideous. Dracula, you know, he's got his own problems, but he really was just after a girlfriend. And this is how my child interpreted it. And I thought, wow, that's, yes. I would say that if I had to pick a favorite, I would say Frankenstein. Poor guy, you know?
And do you know Guillermo del Toro's favorite monster is Frankenstein?
You know, he lives not too far from me in California, I've heard. I'll go to some stores and people go, you know, Guillermo del Toro just came in and blah, 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 blah. He seems like a wonderful human being to me.
Yeah, I do know him personally. Well, once in a movie conference, because I used to work in a newspaper, but we are not friends. And I think he's my best friend, you know. Well,
yes.
And I always see all the interviews that are released on the social media. And he's going to start filming Frankenstein. So
really?
Yeah. And the cast is very, very good cast.
I loved his interpretation of Creature from the Black Lagoon. That was amazing.
I need to see it. So I'm very excited about it. If one day I will be in the United States, passing through your house, I will invite you to the movies to see it.
I'll be there. And I mean, we'll get to see our triplet, because I think he's also a kindred spirit.
Yeah. Let's do it. So, because in Mexico, all this stuff about monsters and death is very popular. You know, yeah. El Día de los Muertos. El Día de Muertos, it's the most magnificent ceremony and of the Mexican culture, but also is part of the UNESCO's the World Heritage. So for Mexicans like me and for Mexicans who are not Mexicans like you, maybe these kind of celebrations are very exciting.
Oh, very much so. I remember I have very little experience. I grew up in Ohio, which is pretty far from Mexico, but now I live in Southern California, so we do get a lot of Mexican culture there. But my real introduction, and you can tell me if this is a bad introduction or not, was the movie Coco that they did it. I cried like a baby at that film. I was like, because I felt like they did it. A good job of communicating to people who are not Mexican what that really meant about relatives and family and ancestors and honoring them. I felt that was really a good intro. Would you say that that was a good representation?
It's a good one, but at the same time, it's very folkloric.
You know?
But for example, Jorge Gutierrez, a friend of mine, made another movie called The Book of Life.
Oh, okay.
And it's very popular. And a lot of kids dressed like death or the characters of the movie. I recommend you that too.
Oh, okay. I'll watch that.
Not only Coco, but both are very good movies. And I was thinking about, do you live in California or where do you live?
Hey, I live in just north of Los Angeles.
Ah, okay. I just been in Los Angeles at the Leala Book Fair a few weeks ago. I just remember Ray Bradbury had a story about the Day of the Dead.
I don't know that one. That's cool.
Amazing. In Spanish, it's called The Tree of the Witches. But
okay.
The American, the original title is different, but I recommend you this one because it's very nice. It's like a travel through the world with different celebrations of death. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I'm in. I love all that stuff.
And where?
One of my favorite seasons.
And Ray Bradbury.
I know.
That's what I knew about California because he used to live in California.
That's right.
So, well, my questions dropped dead in the page, but I want to go back to your books.
Okay.
You are world famous about these little guys called crayons.
Yeah, yeah.
All the kids love your books. I don't know what did you did, but I hate you so much because it's amazing the way that you wrote this story with these apparently simple characters, but very full of joy and doubts and But this was just the beginning. El día que los crayones renunciaron. Mm-hmm. That was the first. And then you made a second one called El día que los crayones regresaron a casa, the day the crayons came back.
Yeah.
And you decided to celebrate Christmas with them too. Even when you was a kid in that Victorian house, did you even imagine that all this could happen to you?
Well, I dreamed it. You dare to dream, you know? It's one of those things like, I'd love that you... You said you hate me. I love you for that. I love you. I understand because, like, I wish I could say, well, here's my mathematical equation for how to make the perfect book. Because there's a bunch of books you've never heard of that I've done that I actually like just as much, if not more, than crayons. But, you know, at the end of the day, you just don't know. You don't know where the cultural focal points are going to land. For instance, when I was little, when I started paying attention to those names on the pages of these authors, I just couldn't believe the joy I was receiving from them. I was like, just, it's paper and ink, and it was changing my life as a little boy. I was like, oh my gosh, this is magic. It's absolute alchemy. What's happening? I didn't know the word alchemy yet, but that's how I felt. So I was like, I want to do that for children when I grow up. That was one of my dreams. Whether it was going to be movies or TV or books or anything, I wanted to make other people feel like these people, these men and women, were making me feel with ink and paper. And to me as a child, I was like, what? How? You know, you're looking at the physical object and you're not... I wasn't able to intellectualize it at the time, but I was able to absorb it emotionally. And I was like, wow, this feeling, I want to give that. And for a long time, people, when they would ask me, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, Drew? I would say, after I found out that Santa Claus, you know, had helpers at the mall, cover your ears, kids. once I found out that Santa had helpers, I said, I want to be a mall Santa. And everybody looked at me like, what the heck's wrong with this kid? I'm getting the beard now, but I got to just grow it out and I got to eat some ice cream. But, you know, I really wanted to give that joy back. And that was seriously, I really was like, I want to be a mall Santa. And I would get laughed at. Everybody else wanted to be the Hulk or Spider-Man. You know, I was like, no, I want to be Santa Claus or an elf maybe. But I wanted to give that joy back. And I went to college at Emerson College in Boston for creative writing. And even then, I guess this is, I was 18, 19, 20. I majored in creative writing with a concentration, two concentrations. One was children's literature and the other was screenwriting. And I thought, well, you know, no matter where the coin lands, hopefully I'll get one of these two when I get out. And my goal at the time was, I want to go work at Disney. And if I have screenplays and I have children's literature, you know, and it was a deep dive into children's literature. You know, we went into like Charles Perrault and Grimm Brothers and Hans Christian Andersen. And then even before them to like the origin, the straight up dark origin of children's stories as like these lessons, you know, don't go in the woods, don't go in a stranger's house. You know, and they weren't telling children what, you know, really would happen sometimes, but they would say, well, there's a wolf in there and there's a monster and there's a witch and she'll eat you. And we really have softened it for our kids. But, you know, our lives are not as hard as they were, you know, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago. So I got this wonderful education at Emerson in children's literature, and it just stayed with me, you know. It stayed with me, and I tried movies first, and I did okay. I wrote some TV shows. I got to write for Disney Channel. I wrote a show called Buzz Lightyear, and I wrote Woody Woodpecker, and you know, I had fun. It was good. It was a good time. I wrote a show called Timon and Pumbaa, which was the lion and the meerkat and the boar from Lion King, and that was super fun. And I got to do a movie that was produced by A Band Apart, which is Quentin Tarantino's company. And it was a feature film, and it was a gangster heist movie. So it's all that rated R Tarantino goodness. But the movie didn't do well. It, like, you know, it went to video back in the days, 1999, 2000, 2000, no, 2002. Back in the days when going straight to video was not a good thing. Pre-streaming. It was like, oh, my movie just went straight to videotape. Oh, well. And then the calls didn't come in, and I was like, oh, this sucks. I'm so close. I almost had the brass ring. You know, I had the blessing of the king. But, you know, I think the movie was okay. It just ended up being a bit of a feathered fish because there were different forces pulling at it, and I was new, and I, you know, didn't know who to listen to and what to do. And, you know, so, but it was a wonderful experience as far as my personal and professional life goes. But then I thought, maybe I should give Kid Lit a chance. I should write that children's book that I've been meaning to write for 10 years. And that was Crayons. So that's where it came about.
Wow. But also, you made the, I don't know how to say it, a reverse way, because you made the Star Wars book, right? A picture book about Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't have it. That's why I don't want to talk about it, because I don't know it.
But that's okay.
Right? You did a book about Star Wars, right?
Yeah, it blew my mind. I left social media in 2016 when the politics in America, as you know, just, it went crazy. There were relatives unfriending each other and people, families fighting. And I was like, I'm out. So I left social media. I had to wean, because you can't leave social media. You'll freak out. But between 2016 and 2019, I was done. But before I had left, the folks at Lucasfilm and Disney had noticed I tweeted a lot of Star Wars stuff, memes and pieces of movies. And I was a big Star Wars fan, because, again, going back to 7 years old in 1977 with my sister in that Chapel Hill movie theater. It was Chapel Hill Cinemas. I'll never forget it. Seeing Star Wars was the most singular, important event of my life regarding storytelling. And I thought, wow, I want to be George Lucas. I want to be Dr. Seuss. I want to be Tolkien. I want these. So they saw me tweeting and posting things, and they said, wow, do you like Star Wars? And they contacted me privately and said, would you like to write a Star Wars book? And I almost, well, I did fall off my chair. I was like, yes, I don't care any little piece of the universe. And what was good about that book, and I think you'll enjoy this, is it was after The Force Awakens came out, and they had said to me, like, they flew me up to San Francisco, and I got to meet the producers and everybody, and they said, you know, when they made the movie, there was 20 minutes of story on The Force Awakens that they didn't cover because there wasn't room for it, and it really wasn't the main story, so they cut it out. And it's the first 20 minutes of adventure that BB-8, you know, the little round guy, it's BB-8's adventure, because in the first few moments, you know, they're in that camp, and Poe says, you gotta run, get out of here. Here's the map to Luke. Boom, and he gives it to him. He says, get out of here. And then BB-8 goes into the desert at night. He looks back at the village, and when he looks at the village, it's on fire, and there's explosions because the stormtroopers are coming. And then he goes into the darkness, and then we follow Poe, and then we follow the other characters, and we end up meeting back up with BB-8 about 20 minutes later when Rey rescues him. And from the guy with the net, right? Mm. But we don't know how he got from running off in the desert to getting caught in the net. And the producer says, we would like you to tell that story in picture book form. And I'm like, wait, so I get to tell 20 minutes of the Star Wars canon? They're like, yeah, it'll be canon. I was like, you know, achievement unlocked. You know, you check the box. So I proceeded to freak out for 6 months trying to come up with a story that I felt was worthy. Because it's like someone saying you get to write one of the books of the Bible. It's like, oh, man, what do I do? What if I screw this up? And at the end of the day, I pitched them. They said, well, you know, we want your ideas. So I went up there and pitched them. And I said, I got a spiritual take. It's almost religious. You know, I'm not a religious person by nature, but I hope that's okay. And they're like, okay, Star Wars is a religious epic. It is, in fact, the hero myth. And it's, you know, it's the Messiah myth and all that stuff. And they said, yeah, what is it? And I said, well, BB-8 has to get this map back to the rebels. And I want him to be tempted by other challenges in the desert, you know, because if he has to make this, the idea is that he has to make a ship, he has to get there on time to make the ship off the planet to get where he's going. But if he stops to help anyone, he'll be late. So he stops a family who is starving because he knows where there's some food in one of the old Star Destroyers. And he stops to help an animal who's injured, who there's med packs that he has to go get. He helps a robot who's been captured himself and gets him out. So he helps somebody out of captivity. So it's almost biblical, right? And I thought they're just going to tell me, you're crazy. Go back to the drawing board. We need more space battles. But they didn't. They got behind it and they said, yeah, this is great. Do it. And I did it. And it's one of the stories I'm actually most proud of because it's a wonderful parable for children on the degrees of goodness. Like, yes, you have this big thing you got to do, but there's other things along the way that may interrupt your big good mission with other moments of goodness and kindness. And, you know, at the end of the day, because he helped the one robot escape captivity, that robot helps him later on. And then Rey rescues him. So she comes out and rescues him. And it's one of her moments of small kindness that he had just been showing throughout his story, if that makes any sense.
It's amazing. It's amazing how the things happens, but also how you contribute with this fantastical dream, because yes, we are always dreaming in something for the future and wanting to something happen, but we wake up every day to make it a little closer to that many dreams that we have.
Yes,
at the end, that's amazing. And later, I found this little guy talking about it. I got it just a few weeks ago when we was going to have the interview.
Oh, okay.
And I love it because, well, it's perfect for these days. Close to Halloween. But also, you find a way to make them everyday guys. I don't know how to say it.
No, that's exactly it. When I wrote the original book, I had, when it came out, the book has a really interesting story, actually. I sat down in 2003. My wife was pregnant with my now 20-year-old child. It's a 20-year journey. And I was like, I just come off of the Tarantino thing. And I was like, I got to have something that my daughter can see that's not rated R with, you know, F words, every other word, you know, because that's kind of, I was writing in Hollywood, these big adventures, rated R and stuff. And I was like, I want something for my daughter. And I did come from children's literature. So my heart was there. And, I poured out I was literally sitting in my office and I had this box of crayons. I'm like, where'd that come from? I was 33 at the time. And I was like, I don't remember. I mean, they're just kind of ubiquitous. You know, crayons are just in your house. And I didn't have any children yet. So I was like, how do I have crayons? I emptied the crayon box onto the desk and was like, each was naked. And I'd somewhere along the way, I'd nervously peeled it off or whatever. And blue was teeny. I mean, I wish I had them with me. I'd show them to you. You'd be amazed that they actually look like the same characters. And I've been a script doctor in Hollywood where I was fixing other people's dialogue, too, as one of my jobs. One of my day jobs was to fix bad dialogue before it became a movie.
Wow.
Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
I didn't know that job even exists.
Yeah, it was, you know, I had just done a big project with, I don't know if you know the director, Tony Scott. Tony.
Some guys.
Yeah, just okay. I miss Tony. He was a wonderful human being, and he was a mentor to me. He was so kind. He had a somewhat sad streak, but he was really funny. He was such a nice person. I miss him, but he gave me quite a bit of free education when I wrote a project with him. But, you know, when I sat down to write Crayons, I looked at those little characters and thought, what am I good at? Like, I don't know what their story is, but I want to tell a story about crayons because at the time there weren't many books on crayons at all. And I was like, oh, I know, I'll write monologues because I write dialogue. So I type, what do I write? I'm going to do, this is how little I knew about kids at that moment. I wrote letters of resignation as if they were quitting, like a job. So the first draft of that is kind of aimed at adults without knowing it, because I just didn't have kids in my life. And then I crafted it down so it was just not about quitting a corporation or, you know, the water cooler, you know, office cubicle kind of thing. And it was more like aimed at a child on a childlike level. But I kept the characteristics of those adult characters in those crayons. And then later, many years later, 10 years later, when the book was published in 2013, that was a 10-year journey just to get a book in my hands. People said, oh, wow, you've really captured the sort of banal and thievish, immature nature of children in your characters. So I was like, oh, joke's on you. Those are adults. I was writing adult characters, not kids. I said, So what you're seeing is how we all act as adults. You know, we're guilty of that. We all have that sort of jealous, irritated, depressed, insecure 7-year-old in here. And I was just doing that. So, and I was writing colloquially because I had been for 10 years at that point. No, well, 12 years I'd been writing screenplays. So I really had paid a lot of attention to dialogue and the way we really speak, broken sentences and ellipses and dashes and half thoughts and, you know, all of that. Like, if you were to, like, transcribe everything that you and I are talking about, there's just all this broken sentences and interruptions. And, you know, it's a beautiful melody of interaction. And I thought, I want to do that in a picture book, because picture books could be, and especially in the old days, were very staid and proper. You know, it was good English, because you're trying to teach children to read and write. But no, I'm just going to talk like we talk. And that's why those characters, I think, feel that way.
Si deseas ver la entrevista con subtítulos en español, la puedes encontrar en el canal de YouTube Revista Lee Más de Librerías Gandhi.
Lee Más es la revista oficial de Librerías Gandhi, la cual la puedes adquirir en todas nuestras librerías a nivel nacional. No te olvides además que si ese mes se te fue comprar un número o quieres otro ejemplar, puedes ingresar en revistalemás.mx o gandhi.com.mx para adquirir los números anteriores por 25 pesitos.
Los gatos han llenado de pelos las páginas que escribimos desde su solo aparente domesticación. Escritores de todas las latitudes coinciden en valorar la belleza, la inteligencia y la audacia de estos pequeños adorables tiranos de cuatro patas. Desde El gato negro de Edgar Allan Poe, que podría leerse como todo un manifiesto contra el maltrato animal, hasta los extravagantes nombres de la manada de Michis de Carlos Monsiváis, la literatura ha encontrado en estos animales una fuente de inspiración inagotable. En este número 179, nos dejamos llevar por los ronroneos y los maullidos, así que encontrarás grandes recomendaciones de literatura, cómics y obras ilustradas protagonizadas por gatos en los artículos de Bev y de Raquel Castro. También descubrirás un cuento inédito y adorable de Rodrigo Morlesín, narrado por un gato librero. Antonio Malpica nos platicó acerca de la desenfrenada vida de la única gatita que ha adoptado, mientras que Brenda Ríos ahonda en aquello que nos fascina de los mininos. También incluimos en este número un póster para que nunca olvides que la vida debe vivirse mediante una filosofía gatuna, con serenidad y centrada en el instante. Para cultivar nuestra curiosidad felina, entrevistamos a dos escritores cuyos libros están causando sensación en las librerías, Nick Bradley y Jordi Soler, así como dos adelantos de novelas que nos engancharon desde la primera página. Un editor que admiramos profundamente, Julián Romero, nos dedicó unas generosas palabras por nuestro 15º aniversario. A él, la mente detrás de los libros de Ediciones Gandhi, le enviamos nuestro agradecimiento por proponernos que el tema de este número estuviera dedicado a los Michis. Consigue este número en librerías Gandhi, gandhi.com.mx y revistaleemas.mx y que, como los gatos, deseamos te mantengas desobediente, libre y curioso.
Hoy, en Breviario Cultural, te presentamos
Meta Entrevista, los crayones de Drew.
¡Atención! El día de hoy tenemos una sorpresa única que llenará su día de color. Están en el estudio nada más y nada menos que las estrellas de los libros de Drew Daywalt. ¡Bienvenidos, crayones! Es genial tenerlos aquí hoy. Tenemos algunas preguntas que queremos hacerles. Comencemos con Rojo, el más popular. Dinos, ¿cómo te sientes siendo el rey de la caja?
¡Saludos!
Bueno, ser el rey puede ser agotador, ¿saben? Siempre me usan para las cosas calientes como incendios y volcanes. A veces me siento muy quemado, necesito un descanso de tanto calor. Unas vacaciones en un campo de manzanas no estaría mal.
Entiendo, Rojo. Todos necesitamos un poco de sombra de vez en cuando. Ahora pasemos a Azul. Cuéntanos, ¿qué te hace sentir como un pez en el agua cuando te usan?
¡Hola a todos! Ser un pez en el agua es genial, literalmente. Me encanta cuando me usan para pintar el cielo y los océanos, pero esos océanos son tan grandes que me mareo.
Sí, los océanos pueden ser enormes, incluso para un crayón. Ahora, ¿qué hay de ti, negro? ¿Cómo te sientes siendo el maestro del misterio en la caja?
Hola a todos. Bueno, puede ser interesante, pero a veces me siento un poco triste. Siempre me usan para las sombras y las cosas oscuras, como los cuervos y las noches sin luna. Quisiera ser el héroe de la historia de vez en cuando.
Entendido, negro. Vamos a encontrar una manera de sacarte de las sombras. Ahora, verde, ¿cuál es tu sueño más salvaje como crayón?
¡Hola a todos! Mi sueño más salvaje es ser utilizado en todas partes, no solo en árboles y cocodrilos. Quiero pintar selvas tropicales y monstruos de pantano.
¡Wow, verde! ¡Eso suena emocionante! Vamos a ver cómo podemos hacer que esos sueños se vuelvan realidad. Y finalmente, amarillo. ¿Qué es lo que más te ilumina la vida como crayón?
¡Hola, hola! Lo que más me ilumina son los días soleados y los dibujos felices. Pero hasta el sol necesita un descanso de vez en cuando. Quiero explorar otros horizontes como playas tropicales y campos de girasoles.
¡Por supuesto, amarillo! ¡Vamos a pintar un mundo lleno de aventuras para ti! Bueno, chicos, debo decirles que ha sido genial tenerlos aquí, pero es momento de regresar a su caja. Queremos agradecer a todos los crayones que nos han ayudado a llenar de color la imaginación de los niños. Si quieres ver más historias de los crayones, busca los libros de esta serie de Drew Daywalt en Editorial Penguin Random House. Volvamos a nuestra programación habitual.
Amigos, espero que les haya agradado. Recuerden que pueden entrar a ver la revista Lemas de abril, dedicado a los niños. Niños y adultos también, porque luego si la dedicamos solo a niños, tenemos que sacar la edición de adultos, que sí lo llevamos a hacer muchas ediciones, pero ya de unos años para acá se hace solamente para niños y adultos en uno. El tema son los gatos. La portada les va a encantar. Es Monsi Báez en forma de gato. O sea, es gato Monsi Báez con su amor tan grande por los gatitos. Y a Patricia Highsmith en su lomo. Entonces tienen que entrar a www.revistalemas.mx para verla digital. Y además pueden ingresar en gandhi.com.mx y comprarla por 25 pesos o ir a nuestras tiendas físicamente y adquirirla. Espero que estén muy bien. Les mando un abrazo. Nos escuchamos la próxima semana.